This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at With Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Enjoy the show. Pamela Paul is the author of 100 Things We've Lost to the Internet. She's also the editor of the New York Times Book Review and oversees all books coverage at the New York Times, which she joined in 2011 as the children's books editor. She's also the host of the weekly book review podcast for The Times. She is the author and editor of 6 books, How to Raise a Reader with Maria Russo, My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues, The Starter Marriage and the Future of Matrimony, Pornified, Parenting Inc., and By the Book, Writers on Literature and the Literary Life. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, the New York Times Magazine, the Washington Post, the Atlantic, and Vogue. She is a former contributor to Time and former correspondent for The Economist and has been a columnist for the Style section of The Times, Worth Magazine, and The Economist. Rectangle Time, a picture book for children, was published in February 2021 by Philomel Penguin Books for Young Readers. Her next book for adults is 100 Things We've Lost to the Internet, which came out in fall of 2021 and which we just discussed in this episode. So please enjoy. Welcome, Pamela. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss 100 Things We've Lost to the Internet.
It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
It's sort of ironic that we're on the internet as we're having this conversation. I feel like we should have, just for old time's sake, you should have been here in person.
I know. I mean, everything I say and do is ironic with this book, like Instagramming about it, like tweeting about it. Like every time I post something about it, I use an exclamation point and an emoticon, both of which, you know, some have cemented the death of a period, which is one of the things we've lost to the internet.
I actually thought about that one probably the most because I had this conversation recently with my daughter where I asked her to like text something to someone because I was driving, and then she showed it to me quickly, and I was like, no, you forgot the period. And she was like, I don't use periods. And I was like, what? Of course you do. And she's like, no, you're not supposed to. And I was like, yes, you are. And then I open up your book and I was like, ugh.
It's really crazy. I mean, everything that we learned in Strunk and White is not true online. It's still true in what I think of as like book writing and real writing. I mean, I love a good deployed exclamation point in a novel. It can be so effective, but in a tweet or in an email or a Slack to someone, you need at least 7 exclamation points. It really is the opposite. It's never use a period, always an exclamation point in online writing. And then in print writing, and what I sometimes think of as real writing, because I'm a little snobbish that way, it is always use a period and only use an exclamation point sparingly. But to use a period really can come, you can come off like a real jerk. I mean, it is better to say thank you with nothing at all rather than use a period.
It's
best with 3 exclamation points, but better not to use a period because that's just sarcastic.
You know, you're so right. I remember right after I went to business school, I tried writing this novel, and I was working with my other friend from business school, Lee Carpenter, who went on to be this like great novelist herself. And
I had
all these exclamation marks in my manuscript. And I remember she had this huge comment. She's like, Zivi, you cannot use exclamation marks in fiction like this. And I was like, really? So I have been self-consciously using exclamation marks since like 2004. And every time thinking I'm doing something wrong, but I'm like, I'm just going to sneak one in. I'm just going to sneak in another one. And now you're like sanctioning the whole thing. It's amazing.
It's funny. I mean, what I tried to do in this book is like, it's not just like noticing that this new thing has happened, right? The new thing is the exclamation points. The old thing, the thing that isn't there anymore, is the period. And it's weird that we haven't talked about it more.
It's true. And I have to say, I was kind of depressed after reading this because I miss all of these things. Like,
aww.
I long for these days. I have such deep nostalgic yearnings for like so many of the ones that we see. I dog-eared like all of the stuff. Oh my gosh, the bookish boy was actually very troublesome to me as the mom of 2 sons, that you don't see guys just like lounging about reading as much as you used to because now they're all playing video games and doing whatever else. I saw a man on an airplane yesterday reading a David Sedaris novel in a hardcover, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Are you loving it?
Yeah. I mean, I have 3 children and 2 of them are boys. And I have to say a lot of their peers don't necessarily read. Some of them do. Some of them do. But what's kind of terrible is that the culture really does discourage boys from reading. But the point in the book that I make is so many of the things that drew boys to books, the internet does, you know, and the internet is very seductive, as we all know. Like, you know, underscoring all of this is that we are all complicit. You know, we are all willing participants in the internet, including me. It's not all negative, and it's more complicated than that. I hope I didn't depress you too much. Some of the things are good that they're gone,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. No, that is absolutely true. And I didn't mean to say it just like that way. You know, I mean, there are something, I'm glad I can remember people's birthdays now. I never used to be able to do that, you know, things like that. School item. Some of these things, yes. Medical forms, huge lifesaver. I wasted so much time filling those out, even just like 10 years ago, by the way. So,
yes. I mean, it's interesting. We are so focused, I think, as a culture, and especially in the media and online, to constantly look forward. And we're always, and we're still, you know, sort of tearing our hair out over it and wondering like, what is going on? You know, right now, for example, the headlines are all about Facebook and Instagram and sort of what the company has known and not known and what has been manipulated. But again, we're looking at constantly moving forward. And what I wanted to do is say, wait a minute, let's just pause for a moment and think about where we were. And part of that exercise, I think, is to make us all stop and think, wait a minute, we actually do have a choice with a lot of this. We do have a choice. It's interesting to me that with the internet, which is really a product, a service, and everything that we use on it are products and services. With technology, we're sort of always told to upgrade, to adopt, to download that app. And that if we don't, you know, we're sort of ignoring the future, we're a Luddite, we're somehow, you know, holding on to the past. And yet, those are just marketing messages, right? We get marketing messages about sweaters, about face cream, about toys for our kids. And a good, you know, number of times, a good amount of the time, we say to ourselves, oh, that's nonsense. Like, I don't actually need that sweater. That face cream doesn't actually do anything. This toy, my kid is going to hate and it's going to break in 5 minutes. We listen to those marketing messages and we take it with a grain of salt. We're skeptical consumers. But strangely, with technology, we're not. It's almost like we kind of have bought into all of those messages. But the truth is, we don't have to do any of these internet-y things if we don't want to, just like we don't have to buy, you know, a new pair of jeans if we don't want to.
I mean, I kind of need to because none of my jeans fit, but that's okay.
Yes, well, that is the pandemic and what it has done to us.
I loved your section too on benign neglect because I really thought that was my mother's expression. I didn't know it was so widespread as to make it into your book. She was always criticizing my parents, not criticizing, sorry, mom, if you're listening, but she was always suggesting that I hovered too much and that benign neglect was the way to parent. And I guess you would agree with that? I don't know.
I agree with a lot of it. I mean, it's interesting to me that, and I have to say, I think that, you know, there, one of the things I love about most about the book is something I had really very little to do with, and that is the illustrations, which are by this amazing illustrator, Nishant Choksi. And I think that this one is one of the ones that has this amazing, funny illustration. And so does another parenting one, which is A Parent's Undivided Attention, which has this like little child, like about to fall off a cliff while the mom is taking a selfie. And sadly, so true. Well, almost. Hopefully no one has died or will. But yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the ways in which we use the internet and the ways that we allow our children to use the internet, it's really, you know, and again, like I'm as guilty as anyone. It's about us. It's about the parents as much as it is about kids. So one of the main reasons, for example, that people say, oh, I finally got my kid a phone is because their child is commuting to school. And they say, I want my child to be able to get in touch with me. I want to be able to reach my child. So when you think about that, really, that's about control for the parent. And it's really hard. Like, I'm not judging anyone because I understand it. I get it. But it's about, yeah, it would be really nice to reach your kid anytime. But if you think back to what it was like before kids all had phones, and what did parents do when they wanted to get in touch with their kids during the school day? Well, they either waited for them to get home and tried online, or they would call the school, but only in an emergency. So think about that. That was deliberate, right? That's just the way it was. That's what we were used to. Maybe, like just maybe, there's something good in that, both for kids and for us as parents.
That's true. Yeah.
And it's hard.
When you have the options there, it's hard not to use them, right?
Like, yeah.
It's tempting.
It is tempting. I mean, look, the internet makes life a lot easier. And that's why there's no way to write a book about the internet and say like, oh, it's all horrible. I mean, certainly think about the pandemic, and especially during lockdown, the internet was a lifesaver. It was the way, I mean, literally, it was the way that people got access to health information, to news, to connecting with their loved ones, to being in touch with people they needed to be in touch with. For those who were able, you know, and lucky enough to work remotely, that meant their livelihood. So it's really almost impossible to imagine just how terrible the pandemic would have been without the internet.
I know. I kept every day I was like holding my breath that the Wi-Fi was going to just completely conk out. I was like, today's going to be the day and that's it. And I'll be disconnected. And it'll just be the kids and us and everything.
Terrifying. And yet, you know, what's so funny is that as the pandemic went on, right, I think we realized it was a very useful lesson in, you know, first part one was like, oh my God, thank goodness we have the internet. This is a lifesaver. And then it was like, wow, what happens when everything is on the internet? What happens when our entire lives is internet. And then that was a really useful lesson. And I think especially for parents, it became really clear that no matter how much educators had argued for all kinds of uses of the internet in classrooms, reducing the classroom experience, reducing education to online only was really tough on kids and parents and teachers. You know, you definitely lost a lot when you don't have a real live teacher coming into a classroom with all of that energy and having her eyes on everyone in the classroom and being able to bring in kids to circle time who didn't want to be lured in and knowing what's happening in the back row and seeing the way kids are ignoring one another or connecting with one another. And then for the kids, you know, like for kids, imagine if, you know, for nursery schoolers, for kindergartners not to have those social connections, and then for high schoolers and middle schoolers not to be able to catch someone's eye. Like, how do you start a friendship? How do you talk to someone? How do you, you know, make connections with other kids without anything, any interpersonal reaction, any of the bodily, facial, hand signals, like vibes that we get when we're just in the room with someone? All of that was gone. And I think every parent noticed the difference and the losses there.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
100%. We've had like so much emotional setback we've had
yeah.
to climb our way out of. Although I was so interesting because, of course, now that school's open, I've had like back-to-back weeks of various classes where everybody has to go remote because someone has COVID in the class or something. So anyway, this week, my son is here. And just an hour ago, I heard the teacher say to them, well, you know, like tomorrow we get to be back in school. And literally all the kids cheered. They were like, yay, back in school. And
yeah.
I was like, well, this would never have happened before. Ever.
I know. Well, if you want to know how to get kids to like school, take it away. Yeah, then we'll see exactly. How happy they are.
Could have used something a little more subtle, but yes.
Yes, yes, for sure.
So why write this book? What made you do this? How long were you thinking about it? Why turn it into a book? The whole story.
All right. So, you know, there are a few different things that were going on. One is that when we talk about the internet, as I mentioned earlier, we're always eyes forward, eyes on the next thing. What's the next upgrade? When's the new product? What's the new app? How can I adapt? What does this mean for my future? And I really felt like, you know, and then maybe we sometimes talk about like, wait a minute, how did we get here? How did this thing become so popular? How did we all end up using, you know, Lyft or Zelle or whatever, you know, the sort of internet toy is of the moment? But what I think we don't do a lot of the time is think back and say, wait a minute, what was it like in the before times? What did we used to do instead of this? Like, how did we wish people birthdays? How did we like all talk as a group? Like, how did all of our college roommates talk to each other before the internet? Like, how did we all like connect? You know, it's hard to think like we didn't all get into group phone calls. No, we actually waited for reunions, or maybe we set up like fun weekends where, you know, a bunch of us could get together, but you didn't have a group chat. So it was kind of forcing me to think about like, well, as you go through your daily life, what are all the ways in which one uses the internet? And then what did we do before that? And kind of scrolling back and pausing and saying, remember what that was like, but also does it have to be this way? Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it too is that I thought, well, not everyone who reads this is going to be as ancient as I am, and they're not going to remember all these old timey things. And I actually thought it would be really instructive. I mean, two of my kids have read it so far, and like, it's news to them, right? They don't necessarily know all of this. They haven't experienced it. They are digital natives. I'll give you one example of a technology thing that happened with one of my kids. And this is not an internet thing, but I found it really instructive. So like most people, you know, when you get a car, you have like three sets of keys or something. And there's that one key that's like the key of desperation that does not have the remote on it. It's just a key, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
So I couldn't find the other keys one day, and I took like that key out, and I guess I hadn't taken it. I went outside with my 16-year-old daughter to go into the car, get into the car, and I opened the door with the key. And she was like, oh my God, you can open a car with a key? It did not occur to her. And like, of course, that's what we did for years and years and years and years. And that's essentially, you know, a metaphor really for the ways in which the internet has become so ingrained in our daily life that we really don't remember what it was like back in, you know, the olden times. Yeah. I mean, and then the immediate impetus for this book too, was that I wrote a piece for the op-ed section of the Times. It was an op-ed called Let Children Be Bored Again. And actually my working title was The Lost Art of Boredom, because I really missed, you know, that those moments of boredom. I was trying to cultivate them in my life because, like most people, I have my most productive ideas, thoughts when I'm in the shower. You know, it's really annoying because you're like, oh, I got to rinse out my conditioner so I can go and like write this down before I forget it. But there's a reason why we have those creative thoughts in the shower. It's because we got nothing else to do. You know, we're pretty bored with washing. We know how to wash our body and our hair. So your mind wanders and does other things. And now we don't really allow for those moments of our minds wandering because we have the internet. And I grew up, you know, sort of constantly languishing in the backseat of the car. And if I wasn't getting along with my brothers at that moment, and we weren't playing some kind of, you know, game like car bingo or whatever, I was subjected to my parents' horrible music coming from the front. And I just stared out the window and my brain went where it went. And it struck me as a parent that now, you know, there's no chance of that happening to my kids. There's so many podcasts we could listen to, and we don't even all have to listen to the same thing, right? Once they have their own devices, everyone can be listening or doing their own thing. You could be, one person can be playing Fortnite. Another person can be listening to a music podcast. The third person could be listening to an audiobook. Like, everyone is constantly entertained. And I thought, what do we lose? What do we lose? With all those gains, they are gains. What is it that we miss out on? And so it's interesting, you know, how you said earlier, and I won't dwell on this any further, but that the book was depressing because when I was thinking about what to write about, I was thinking, I have all these feelings towards the internet and to the way in which our lives have changed for the better and for the worse. And a lot of it makes me upset and a lot of it makes me angry, but I want to kind of steer away from those emotions. And I want to get to maybe a more nuanced, slightly bittersweet place of like, hey, just let's take a moment. Let's take a moment and pause and reflect. and think about these things for a while. And so those were the 100 things. I mean, I have to say it started off as like 168, but it ended at 100.
I swear I did not mean that this was like a depressing read, full stop. I did not mean for it to come across that way. I just meant I was longing for some of the olden days when things were simpler. And this reminded me, but it reminded me in a good way. I mean, there's like, you know, that those rose-colored glasses from when you're younger and everything seemed great with like, you know, innocent trips to like, I don't know, the beach with an outdoor shower and the sunset and, you know, everything seemed perfect, but of course it wasn't. So
anyway.
And so I'm sorry if it like you wrote a depressing book. I totally enjoyed the book. It was great. It's great to like remember and take stock and be honestly, I mean, the whole book is an exercise in mindfulness really, right? It's saying, here's where we are. Like, don't take this for granted. Like, look at this and analyze it. Do you like it? Do you not like it? And think about it. Don't let it just pass you by.
You know, it's funny because I think a lot of it is also really funny, like the kind of things that we did in the pre-internet era. I just posted on my Instagram notes that I'd passed in class because I've kept them all. I have all the notes I passed. I have them in an accordion file, which is one of those things that most people don't have anymore, physical files and file cabinets, but I have them and the tabs are marked by grade. And I pulled out some of them and they, you know, amused me to no end. But of course, at the time we took it incredibly seriously. Like it, the whole passing notes thing, you could get caught. Your note could be read. An enemy could find your note. A teacher could get your note. You could get in trouble for what you wrote in notes. And yet we all did it. Like that was the most fun and exciting part of being in class. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, now, because of course kids are often on a device in class and they can, you know, they can go online and I guess they can text each other. Right. So that's the version of passing notes, but there's something about having these physical objects that I just love. And now when I look back at them, they're pretty hilarious.
Well, it's also when you talk about like things you've lost, I mean, I don't know about you, but for anybody who I've lost, who has passed away, the first thing I do is take an inventory on what I have left that they have written. Do I have a birthday card? Do I have a note? What pictures do I physically have? I don't go like, sometimes later I'll go searching through emails, but it's not the same. Like I hold on to those cards like they're a true gift. And that's something else I feel like, you know, you lose. It's not the same. It's just not the same when you lose that and migrate all to digital.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm assuming you have baby albums, right? Like, did you make like a baby books for all your kids? I don't know if everyone does anymore, you know, like, and we certainly don't print out as many photos. I don't know about you. Do you print out all the photos?
I have to say, I should turn my video back on because I have a whole wall that is photo albums, but I have started paying my son, who's 14. He makes me a photo album every month through the Photos app and makes it on Shutterfly. But if I have a photo album from literally every month of my life. Yeah.
Well,
but
you've done like an amazing hybrid internet, you know, sort of real photo thing, right? You're doing them
that's true.
From a website.
No, I'm not pasting them in anymore. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, I have all those photo albums. And of course they were always in like a kind of disorder, at least in my life, you know, half of them would be 4x6s and some would be 3x5s and some would be glossy and some would be matte and some would be faded and some would be ripped and some would be Polaroids. And like, you know, it's a mess in there, but it is interesting because I do think when you go through those physical objects, like it just brings back a lot, even the disorder, right? You can be like, oh yeah, I remember because I pulled out that photo in order to use it for this project. And then I put it back in when I was done. I must have put it in the wrong place. It's like a bunch of things just comes flooding back to you when you have the physical presence of actual 3D objects.
I literally have a tote bag in the bottom, in the back bottom, like of my closet hidden away. It's like this black tote bag with some magazine that's no longer in business, stuffed full of negatives because I don't know what to do with them. Like I just don't want to lose them. I don't know where to put them, but what if I need them? I don't know. So yeah. I hear you.
You know, and speaking of magazines, there is a thing. It's one of the chapters in my book is on magazines. I mean, yes, they still exist, some of them, but so many are gone and they're not the same as they once were. I mean, remember how thick the September magazines used to be and how exciting it was. Like if you had a long flight to go to the newsstand at the airport and be like, I'm going to treat myself to every single magazine I want. And like, you would have like a heavy stack in your arms.
It's true.
No longer.
I still do that for my kids, though, sometimes. Those are good. You know, if there's anything that looks interesting, I'm like, here, have a magazine. Enjoy the flight. Take 5 minutes in case your iPad dies or something.
Right. There's something to those National Geographics.
Also, even with InStyle, I remember when they started doing features inside celebrities' homes, and I was like, no way, we get to see inside celebrities' homes? And now on Instagram every day, it's like, here I am in my living room from every single person. So
Right. I mean, who needs, Star Trek or whatever, all of the tabloid magazines with all the photos of stars, because they're all over the internet. Yeah. Of course, what's funny is I personally never look at them on the internet, but I did really like back in the day to go and grab like a bunch of those, I love People magazine. I loved, grabbing a bunch of those gossipy kind of magazines on occasion at the dentist or the doctors and looking through them. But somehow, even though the internet has so much on it, somehow it's like the glut of information, it's too much. And I never actually sit down and be like, you know what, I'm going to look at some nice photos of owls today. Or like, let's go on Google Earth and see what it looks like in Norway right now. I never do it.
No, me neither. I mean,
but you could.
I mean, meet you in Norway. I don't know. Well, so, I mean, this is so fun. And obviously, like, the book just starts so many conversations. Like, you are never going to be bored at a dinner party again the rest of your life if we ever go back to dinner parties, because there's so much to discuss. You know, like, everyone has a story on everything. So, in a way, it's like a collective conversation that you've started, which is awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I thought that, we all kind of talk on occasion about one or two of these things. They come up like, oh, yeah, remember when? Remember that? And I thought, what if you gather them all up in one place and look at the accumulation, the cumulative effect? It's really kind of startling, because then it drives home just how much things have changed.
So true. Wow. Okay, so after this project, what's on your docket aside from, I'm assuming you're continuing with your own podcast and the New York Times book review and all that, or maybe not, I don't know, question mark?
Yeah, I mean, no, I have a very, very full-time job at the New York Times and also, hosting the weekly book review podcast. And I have three full-time kids. And my last book was a picture book before this. And actually, I'm working on another one of those. So
amazing.
Yeah, I really do love books for children. And though my children are not in that picture book reading demographic, although they do enjoy them as an art, I've never totally let that go. I'd love that format. So that's my next thing.
Me too. I love children's books. I'm like, are you guys really getting too old for these? Not yet, but soon.
Yeah, you're never too old for children's books.
That's true. So do you have any advice for aspiring authors? I know you gave some the last time you came on.
Oh, gosh. I mean, look, I have a dog in this race. My advice is always read lots of books, read books, because I think that's the best way to learn how to write. And gosh, it's really hard to deviate from there. Now that I have, my children like to write as well, and they ask the same thing, like, can I take a writing class, this and that? And my answer is always really the best thing, the best thing to do is to read and to write. There was an anecdote that I read recently. Oh gosh, I'm going to forget what it is, because one of the things we've lost to the internet is our memories, and I lost mine. But there was just this great anecdote. Oh, I think it was Sinclair Lewis, who was invited to teach a class or to give a lecture on how to become a writer, way back in the day, like in the 20s or the 30s. And he just got up and he said, everybody go home and read. And he walked off. And that was the end of the speech. I'm totally paraphrasing this anecdote, and someone will surely Google it, as we now can do, and be like, you know what? You got that wrong. It wasn't Sinclair Lewis. It wasn't in the 20s and 30s. And what he actually said was X. But yeah, that's one of the things the internet has brought us, I guess.
Amazing. All right. Well, Pamela, thank you. Congratulations on Pub Day. I should have started off by saying, so sorry that I'm doing this all in reverse. But anyway, congratulations on 100 things we've lost to the internet. And at least one thing we've gained is the ability for us to have this conversation right now. So there you go.
There you go. And next time, I hope, in real life, Simi.
Yes, me too.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.